This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I mean, CMT, this is what I look forward to all week long. The Friday CMT, the game five of what time did Rick go to bed last night, coming up later in the show. So we'll be heavy into football today because we're not far off from the start of football. But before we get deep and heavy into the world of sports, pleasantries. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Rick and Dave.
That sounded hesitant.
Well, I'm hesitant, Dave, because it's a summer Friday and you mentioned how excited you are for the show. I'm excited about the show. But I was also excited when I woke up this morning about the 2 o'clock tea time that I had in Sea Pines. But when I looked at the forecast, it's supposed to be 92 degrees this afternoon. Yes, I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen. And I was looking forward to playing the course because they actually redesigned it. And you're talking about being a week after the Heritage. But I don't know if that's going to happen today.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that would be unfortunate. I hope for your sake it does.
Well, I mean, it's up to me completely, Dave, but it is 92 degrees.
Well, I guess the question is, do you want to tolerate 92 in the heat of the day?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, well, back in the day when I was playing football, yeah, you're going out there 92 degrees because you're getting a check for it. But now I'm actually paying to be in that kind of heat?
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know if that's what I want to do today.
Rick, we turn to you, and hopefully you don't have the same problems that Chris is enduring today. How are you? Good morning.
I don't even remember how to swing a golf club at this point. I'd have to watch Dorf on Golf to learn how to swing a golf club. I haven't played golf in that long. I'm all right. I made this decision though. I'm telling you right now, and you can hold me to this once we get back in the studio.
Hang on. I'm writing this down. Santi,
write this down. Hold me to this.
Okay.
I'm going dark. I'm done with technology. I'm done reading things. I'm done.
Stop it. This is nonsense.
You just said you were a hacker at the beginning of the week.
Yeah. You're the guy that can hack into any system.
Self-proclaimed hacker.
I'm giving up hacking. I'm not even going to connect my own machine anymore. I'm done. I'm through.
What happened?
Finished.
You would do such nonsense.
I'm a nervous wreck, Dave.
Why?
Anxiety levels through the roof.
Why?
This is game seven. Anxiety. Because I'm floating around the internet looking for observations and everything this morning, and I come across, just floating through the internet.
I like your word, floating around, okay.
Yeah, I'm floating around, hacking through some stuff, you know, typing in, you know, certain algorithms and everything else that us hackers like to do, and I come across, you know, a couple new symptoms of COVID released by the CDC.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Diarrhea being one of them. Guess who had a little stomach issue last night? This guy.
But come on. You've barely left the house. Just because you have a little upset stomach doesn't mean you have COVID.
Now I'm a nervous wreck. I feel like I have to go get tested at this point.
This is what happens.
Knowledge is not power. Whoever said that, probably was bald and locked themselves in a room.
Can you wait until you have like 48 hours of symptoms before you're rushing off for a COVID test?
Dave.
Yes.
I can't even tell my wife that I had this stomach problem last night.
God forbid. Told everybody on the radio.
Well, hopefully she's not listening right now.
You better hope she's not listening.
Otherwise, I'll be at the drive-through clinic this afternoon.
I'm just hoping I get past it. I think you'll be okay. I mean, you haven't left the house.
I've gone grocery shopping, Dave.
A couple different times. Okay. Well, I would wait.
I'm concerned. Now I'm going through my head. Did I kind of just let my guard down a little bit. I'm concerned about this.
So you could have had like a bad meal and you're thinking COVID.
A lot of dry fruit yesterday. I had a lot of dry fruit.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
a lot of dry fruit.
I'm hoping that's
run
what
right
it was.
Run right through you.
I'm hoping it was the dried prunes. Yeah. I'm hoping that's what it was.
Dried apricots, by the way.
Oh. I had some of those too, in honor of you.
Rick, before we get into the show, you brought up observations, and I hate to do this, but I think we got to nominate one of our own here at 98.7 for observations.
Right off the bat?
Right off the bat. There was something that happened on the show that follows ours yesterday that qualifies
Barton,
as dry snitching.
Local meat.
Yeah, the local meat. I'm uncomfortable with the direction that the driver of that show decided to go with the show's Twitter account. Just saying.
So you mean Alan Hahn? So we can nominate Alan Hahn.
We can nominate.
Well, I look
Alan?
Forward okay. to this. What I, okay. I wonder what whatsoever he might have done. We'll find out in observations.
Yeah,
it's a nice little tease.
That is a tease.
The old 10:01 tease. I like
it. The old 10:01. The 2-hour and 29-minute tease is very well respected in the industry. All right, A lot of football today. We have a lot of things to do as far as the NFL. We haven't really spent a lot of time on this Jamal Adams thing. It happened during the show yesterday. Greg Williams spoke. Let's take a listen. Here's the Jets defensive coordinator. He loves coaching Jamal Adams, and he's got his back.
He has to handle his contract. He'll do all that kind of stuff. He'll do those things. But, you know, we always have to have the next man up philosophy, and we've been able to do that. We'll have to address those things later on, but I'm hoping everything goes well. I love coaching him, and I got his back.
Well, what does that mean, Chris? I've got his back.
Well, I mean, he's supporting the player. I mean, Greg Williams also went on to say, you know, he's not getting involved with anybody's contracts talks, but he wants to let everybody know that he wants his all-pro safety to feel good about being a Jet. And Dave, at this point, the only way that that's going to happen, the only way that they can mend fences is if Joe Douglas and Adam Gase come together and figure out a way to try to get Jamal Adams a contract extension, because absent of that, I don't know how they get Jamal Adams back on the same page with them in terms of program building and being a leader and being an advocate for what Adam Gase wants to do with the direction of this team. I just don't see that happening.
I can't tell. I'm a little bit confused. I don't know if this is, you know, a well-thought-out plan by the Jets and Greg Williams to show Jamal Adams support. I mean, with the Jets and how it works is, I mean, they essentially have two head coaches. They have Greg Williams coaches the defense and right. Adam Gase who coaches the offense. Or is this Greg Williams just checking the boxes, you know, gaining the trust of Jamal Adams so when Adam Gase is fired and he becomes the interim head coach, that the best player on the team supports him?
That'd be pretty diabolical, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, he says the exact opposite of what we heard from Adam Gase last season, where Adam Gase was concerned about Le'Veon Bell's contract and C.J. Mosley's contract. And Greg Williams says, you don't mess with a man's contract. You don't mess around with a man's money.
Right, right.
Which is the opposite of what Adam Gase did. There's a real problem with the Jets, I'm telling you right now.
I could not agree with you more.
But this
and
is
I don't
not
think
speculation.
It's solely Jamal Adams, to be honest with you.
It's not. I don't care what Alex Lewis says. I'm not speculating. There is a lack of respect for the head coach inside that locker room.
That's where it starts, though, Rick. It starts with the respect of the head coach and the things that Adam Gase has done throughout his tenure as the Jets head coach, but also his reputation coming from being the Miami Dolphins head coach. I mean, there are a lot of star players down there with the Dolphins that didn't have positive things to say about Adam Gase. And you're hearing and seeing a lot of those same things up here with the Jets, which is, if you're a Jets fan, it's got to be frustrating because Jamal Adams is actually a draft pick that you hit on. You took the guy with the sixth overall pick in the 2017 draft, and 3 years later, he's the best safety in football. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but it doesn't seem like it's one of those hard things to figure out if you're the Jets. If you want him to be a building block piece, if you want him to be a part of your foundation, then why wouldn't you revisit his contract when you have that first opportunity to? It's not like the Jets didn't see this coming. Not like the organization didn't have any idea that, you know, we might have to look at Jamal's contract this offseason. He was a Pro Bowl safety in year two, all pro in year three, best safety in the game.
And that doesn't want to be a New York Jet.
There's no argument about that.
No, there's no argument, but he doesn't want to be a Jet.
Loud and clear.
So we can sit here and bang the table.
You say he doesn't want to be a Jet, Rick, but $50 million guaranteed will change somebody's mind in terms of whether or not they're happy playing somewhere.
He wants $20 million a year. The Jets aren't going to pay him $20 million a year.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to pay him $20 million a year. I don't think that's
Well, he's not, but
he'd be happier on a better situation.
Yes.
Somewhere else.
Yeah.
Unless they fire Adam Gase tomorrow, Jamal is going to want 20 to stay because then he'll deal with it. Otherwise, he has no interest in dealing with Adam Gase and the losing that goes on here. He's all set.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Rick. We won't even know because the Jets have made him a contract offer. Like, that's the part of it. Like, we have no idea where Jamal Adams is at with the money. Now, we know he wants significantly more than what Eddie Jackson got, and he should because he is definitively a better player than Eddie Jackson, who's getting $14.6 million a year. But, I mean, the Jets haven't even engaged in any contract talks with Jamal. I mean,
I don't think they intend to.
But how ridiculous would that be, though, Dave? You're talking about the best player on your team last year. Why wouldn't you want to discuss what it would take to work out a long-term contract, if for no other reason so you have the information and you can conduct yourself accordingly? if you have no intentions of paying Jamal Adams and you have this conversation earlier in the offseason,
yeah, then you could have dealt
him. Then maybe you have some more options going into the draft on the things that you can do. Maybe you give Joe Douglas a little more ammunition so he can be more flexible.
Look, I agree with you 100%, but from everything I've read and people I've spoken to, it doesn't sound like there's any intent to sign him to a deal this offseason.
Well, here's the thing. Do you not want to sign him to a deal this offseason because he's been complaining about it, because he's been vocal about it? Like, is he not in the long-term plans of the team? Or is it that we don't want to sign him to a long-term deal because we plan on moving on from him?
I think we don't want to sign him to a long-term deal right now because we don't have to.
Yeah, I understand that they don't have to, Dave, and they can exercise that leverage over him because they can control his rights for 2 and most likely 3 more years. But just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And when you're talking about Jamal Adams, the caliber of player he is and the impact that he has on your team winning, you have to recognize that this is one of those situations that's the exception and not the rule. You can't deal with Jamal Adams like you're going to deal with the other guys on your team. Jamal Adams is different.
Yeah, but he's not $20 million a year.
No, God, no.
It's a two-way street. I mean, you can control him, and you can be spiteful and not pay him for the next 3 years if you choose. I mean, that wouldn't be how I approached it because I need him on board if we're going to have success. I mean, he's the heartbeat of this team. He's the emotional leader of this team. But it's a two-way street. I mean, Jamal's going to want to have to. I mean, it has to be a negotiation. It can't be, here's the number, and that's what I want, otherwise trade me. And that's right now what it is. In order to deal with this level of dysfunction and the fact that he doesn't like the head coach, if you pay him exactly what he wants, he'll deal with it. Otherwise, he has no interest.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If you're the Jets, you don't know exactly what he wants. You haven't even decided
to sit down
and have negotiations.
They have a pretty good idea of what he wants.
They have a pretty good idea of what he wants.
They have a good idea of what he wants. They know what he wants. They haven't. They're not going to. If someone asks for an exorbitant amount of money that you're not going to pay him, well, why? What am I going to come back with? I come back with, you know, more than Eddie Jackson. That's not close to 20 a year. That's not even a negotiation. It's going to laugh in my face.
I get exactly what you're saying, but if that's the case, then that gives you more of an opportunity to do things before this becomes as ugly as it has in public. I guess that's my whole point with the Jets. Like, this is one of those things that you address. This is priority one at the beginning of the offseason. Like, I know that Joe Douglas went to Sam Darnold's folks and said, my number one focus is trying to protect your son and to make sure that he's right. And I get that that's your quarterback, but you also got to recognize that you got the best player on your team that's going to be looking for a new deal. And if you don't want to pay him whatever it is, $20 million a year, then you got to decide, okay, are we going to move off of him, or are we going to try to have a situation where we're going to have a contract holdout going into a pivotal year for our star quarterback and our head coach? See, to me, the disruption is not worth it. That's why I want to address this sooner rather than later. But to let it get to this point is a misstep by the Jets. I don't agree with the way that they've handled this entire situation because it didn't have to come to this, at least not publicly.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, this was a decision that should have been made before the draft.
Yep.
Unless they tried to shop him during the draft and they didn't get the deal that they wanted and they felt like that, you know, over the course of, you know, the next couple months, they could smooth this thing out and figure a way to get past it.
But how can you smooth it out, Rick, unless you pay him? Unless I'm mistaken, there's no smoothing this thing without money at the end of the rainbow.
Agreed.
Unless you thought at the time you would get to a point where he would be more reasonable and there would be a number that you could agree to. As opposed to staying.
You got
to
read the room better than that.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't disagree. And you know, I guess at this point, if he has no interest in being a Jet, the best case scenario for the Jets fan in the Jets is that you find a team that really wants him and you get the best possible deal that includes players that can help you now. Like there would be a Lyle Collins to help your offensive line. In a Gallup, if you're going to trade him to get the wide receiver and the offensive lineman that you need, if you're going to trade him to Dallas. I don't know what good draft picks do you at this point.
They don't do any good. I mean, they do good for next offseason, but if you're Adam Gase, I mean, what does that do for you? You need to win right now.
I know we're saying that, and that seems obvious to most Jets fans, but we'll get into, you know, how the rosters of NFL teams have been graded And when you look at that, I mean, what are honest expectations? And does his relationship with Joe Douglas give him a little bit more leeway than we think? Chris Johnson handpicked him. Let's not forget that, too. Chris Johnson handpicked him, got rid of the GM he didn't like, and brought in the GM that he did like. Let's not forget how Adam Gase swings it in that building.
Yeah, no, he swings it big in that building. You're right.
So we can pretend to believe. I mean, we can, you know, fingers crossed, believe that, you know, if he doesn't have success, he'll be gone. But we don't know that as a fact.
Which is even more concerning. I mean, if Adam Gase has another subpar season, are you bring him back again?
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, too. But right. Subpar, I mean, they won seven games. And however you want to look at those seven games, you can, you know, choose to look at them way you want. I'm not a huge fan of the seven wins and how they won those games. When you start off 1-7 in mono, whatever, I get it. But you lost to an 0-11 team and you lost to an 0-7 team. It's brutal. It's embarrassing. But if you're 8-8, I mean, is that good?
If you're 8-8 and you were not 1-6 and then wind up 8-8, if you're, you know, 3-4 and wind up 8-8 and the quarterback gets better this year, yeah, I think that's within reason of bringing Adam Gase back again. I would think so.
Okay, so then if you're Jamal Adams, why would you sign up for that if you can't stand him? If you're going to be, if being a mediocre team, being a 500 team is enough to keep a head coach that you can't stand around, why would you want to be a part of that? So you have to go another year with him?
Yeah.
Not making the money that you want? I mean, look at his list of teams that he wants to go to.
Yeah, he wants to go to all teams that are going to be good.
Better than good. I mean, he's that. Those are the cream of the crop teams.
Yeah.
Those are the teams that could win a Super Bowl this year. So if I can force their hand now, when you realize that, I mean, an NFL player's career is, I mean, very finite.
Yeah.
You think he wants to waste more years here?
I'm sure he doesn't.
If he can get out now?
I'm sure he doesn't. Let's get to some of these calls here. 800-919-3776.
Especially when you see, I mean, especially when you've seen it worked. I think Jalen Ramsey did it.
Yeah.
Odell did it.
Yeah.
Odell got paid and then did it and still was able to do it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Forced his way out. Which destroyed the Giants and he still forced his way out of town. Ira in Staten Island. Ira, lead us off. Good morning. You're on 98.7.
Good morning, DCR. And by the way, Odell is still losing, even though he got off the Giants.
Good.
But you know what? You look at the whole thing, Greg Williams, you know, don't put, you know, whether the Jets put him up to it, whether he's going against Gay. Greg Williams he spoke how he feels. And he said what he said. If anything, maybe it'll help the Jets with getting the price up. But, you know, the bottom line here, and Rick, you know, you're 100% right, man. Adams, if you want to overpay me, I could deal with the losing, whether he likes the head coach or he doesn't. Okay, he is not going to hang around for another 2 years before this team is ready to make a real push, if that's how he feels. So he's going to want to get overpaid. If not, then go out of town. The bottom line is he said he would play for other teams without getting an extension. What does that tell you? He doesn't want to be part of the organization. You hate to, you know, we haven't drafted very well.
So you trading him, Ira? Are you going to look at a deal him right now?
With the right package, yes, but just keep this in mind. Both sides, it's the Jets and Adams, they're both dealing with something that I think that's what's going to delay this. Because of the pandemic, okay, nobody knows what the salary cap's going to be next year. It's going to be down, so it's hard to really sink money into somebody. And it's hard to get any type of value or draft picks because you don't know where those picks are going to be next year. You don't know where the season's going. So that's why everything's on hold this year, and Adams needs to just shut up, come into town, do his job, and if not, you know what? If he's going to destroy the season and be disgruntled, I got to get rid of him. Bottom line.
Well, here's my thing. Ira, let me ask you this question, though, because Jamal Adams started this whole thing with wanting to get paid by the organization, and he got frustrated because they were unwilling to start up negotiations, start up talks on a new deal. I guess my question to you, Ira, is, if you're Jamal Adams, why would you want to wait to get your money when there are people that haven't done nearly as much for the organization as you have already gotten paid? Why should I wait?
No, I'm all for Adams. I'm all for the players to get every penny they could squeeze out.
No. But I'm saying, why should Jamal Adams wait? They have the provision in the collective bargaining agreement where you can address a player's contract after his third year. You got a middle linebacker that you're paying $17.5 million to, the Jets organization. I get it. It was under McCagnan. But you're paying him $17.5 million he's played in two games. Why, if you're Jamal Adams, the best player on the team, why should you wait when other guys are getting their money?
No, I get that. It's just if he did it behind closed doors and didn't make it public, I wouldn't have an issue with it. But because he's gone public with it, and you know he's playing the media, and he's going out there and he's talking about the team, you can't negotiate that way. It's not the right way to do business, man. It's just
I have a hard time believing that Jamal Adams came out and decided he was going to start doing this without trying to get his agent to have the conversation to broach the topic with the team. I have a hard time believing. The first time the Jets became aware that Jamal Adams wanted a new contract was when he put it out on social media or when he talked to the media this offseason. I don't believe that.
Well, I do. You know, I personally do. And I think that's why he asked for 20, going back to Rick's point. I think he asked for 20 because he said, you know what, if I'm going to stay here and we're going to continue to lose, or I don't like the head coach, you're going to have to overpay for me. And I think that's exactly what he did.
All right, have a good weekend.
I don't even want to say it's overpay. He wants his money. He wants an incentive to stay here, which is why he probably wanted them to address his contract earlier this offseason. Like, if I'm going to be a part of a team that's losing, if our record is going to be what it is, what are they, 16-32 since he's been a Jet?
Yep.
If I'm going to be on a team that's losing that much, we're losing twice as much as we're winning, then at least give me some incentive. And making me not only the highest paid player at my position, but putting a little respect on it, you know, 16 and a half, maybe even $17 million, that changes how I feel about it. There's no reason that Jamal Adams shouldn't get paid that amount of money. I think he's worth that, and I know that there are teams around the NFL that would pay that. Where the player gets frustrated is when he actually knows that from his agent in conversations that his agent has had, and the team is reluctant to engage in negotiation talks. That's probably why he decided to make it as ugly and as public as it is. Now, I don't believe that the damage is irreparable, because I think if you give him $50 million in guaranteed money, that changes the way a player feels. But, I mean, this doesn't get resolved by the Jets playing hardball with Jamal Adams. It just doesn't. Not in a way that's beneficial for all parties.
I just think he wants out. I think because of what happened at the deadline, the fact that Dallas was one of the teams that was involved, I think he wants to try to get himself out of New York into a team that
didn't have to come to that, though. He didn't start this offseason saying he wanted out. That's not what he said. He said he wanted to start negotiation talks. He wanted a new deal.
Yeah, but if you're starting those negotiations as, I want $20 million, that's not a negotiation. You're not going to get that. C.J. Mosley got overpaid because he was a free agent. And Mike Maccagnan was the one making the decision because he was desperate. Joe Douglas isn't desperate.
Where are we getting this $1 million number from? Where is $20 million coming from?
That's what he wants. Is $20 million. That was the ask.
He never.
That's what Jamal Adams said. That's what his agent said.
That's what he's looking for to stay with the Jets. Yeah,
you can't pay him that.
No, I'm not saying that. I don't think anybody's going to pay him that. But okay. All right. Well, you guys.
He wants 20 because the Jets stink. He wants 20 because he knows they're not going to pay him. The Jets stink, and he doesn't like Adam Gase. He wants out. He wants to be traded to a team that's going to win now. That's what he wants. And it's not going to take $20 million a year to re-sign with that team because they're a good team and they win.
Right. So much so that he says he doesn't even need an extension if he goes to a team he wants to go to.
Exactly right, because that's what he's concerned about.
He doesn't want to be here.
I think he's sick of wasting his prime years on a team that doesn't win with a head coach that he doesn't respect. And if you know that the head coach is tied to the GM because they have a great relationship, and he may not be getting fired anytime soon, why would you want to be here then?
He doesn't want to be here. He's made it perfectly loud and clear.
And the other fear would be, I mean, who knows if he's going to be happy? Say you do give him his money and the team is, you know, has another bad season or another average season and Adam Gase is still going to be here. Are you going to be happy still? I mean, then I'd probably still be unhappy if my main goal was to win. There's only so many years in an NFL career you can waste losing. He's already wasted 3.
Mm-hmm.
I understand both sides. I don't blame Jamal Adams for wanting to be. I mean,
but do you
it breaks
blame
my
Joe
heart.
Douglas?
I don't blame either side.
Yeah.
If it's not a true negotiation, I understand both sides. If you're Joe Douglas, you didn't draft him. He's your best player, but if he's being unreasonable, I'm not going to pay him $20 million a year or $18 million a year. He's got to be willing to do. I mean, that's how it works in the NFL. It's next guy up, you get more than the highest paid guy. Now, I think he's one of the better defensive players in the league. That don't mean I'm paying him 20. I consider paying him 16 and a half, 17.
Oh, still a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but he's your best defensive player.
If the Jets had conversations with Jamal earlier this offseason when he wanted to, you believe that number would have been 16? You believe it would have been 16 or 17? Or do you believe it would have been 20 million? Like, if they had conversations as soon as the offseason ended with Jamal, when he wanted to talk about money, if they would have done that, would Jamal still be looking for $20 million a year? Or would it be more like $16, $17 million a year?
I think if they, for lack of a better word, placated him early in the offseason, it would have been a much lower number than a 20.
But that's my whole point. That's what I keep coming back to. That's the part I can't get past. Like, everybody says, well, the Jets are doing the exact right thing with Jamal Adams playing hardball because they control his rights for a minimum of 2 and possibly 3 more years with a franchise tag. That's absolutely ridiculous. Like, you can't say that you're worried about setting a precedent with other players and all they have to do is, you know, make noise to get you to rip up a contract with multiple years left on it, because other players ain't Jamal Adams. They're not. Spent 11 years in an NFL locker room, and I know that all the players in the NFL locker room aren't treated the same by the front office. Defensive lineman, guess what? He can't do what the quarterback does. He can't. As far as contract negotiations go, he can't. I saw it firsthand with OCU Manure. You can't do it. You understand that you're not going to be treated the same. But when you're an all-pro player like Jamal Adams is under the age of 25, it's going to be a little different. It has to be a little different. And I just don't understand why the Jets are trying to take this hard-line position with one of their best players, if not their best player.
Let's go to Mike and Hawthorne. Mike, you're next up on 98.7.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for all you guys are doing. I hope your families are well. Listening to everybody, listening, going back and forth, my head's going to explode about this, because the first thing is that this kid is a great player, okay? He was the number 6 pick. He's supposed to be a great player right out of the gate. We're expecting this kid to be unbelievable.
Hang on. You expected him to be the best safety in football right out of the gate.
No, my point is that you're talking with two guys that are the guys that you work with understand what I'm talking about with that. He's the number 6 player in the draft as a safety. He is not just a safety. With the numbers you went over before, this kid can play almost any position other than an interior defensive lineman on the field. He's a special talent. You knew that coming out of college. They should have done this off the record. They should have done this behind closed doors. They're 100% right. That being said, okay, when they say guys like him outplayed his contract, I totally disagree. If you're a top 10 player, you're the number 1 safety, you're an absolute, you've been touched by God.
So then, Mike, what is outplaying your contract then? If he hasn't outplayed his contract, what is the definition of outplaying it?
Well, I'm trying to ask you guys, why do you say he outplayed his contract? He's the number
because
6
the highest paid safety in the NFL is getting $14.6 million a year, and Jamal is getting 3.5 this coming year. That's what we're talking about.
I'm agreeing with you guys. My point is that the Jets, I'm a season ticket holder for the Jets for the last 12 years, okay? I haven't been to a game. I sell the tickets, but my son just graduated. He was a 4-year college player. I was planning on going back and start watching the games this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. They got this kid. They got the lineman. And the Jets, they couldn't – I have a thing I'd like to say, but I can't run the radio. But the Jets couldn't get lucky in you know what kind of a house with a fistful of hundreds, because they screw everything up. They got this kid who's going to be a generational player, and they don't know how to freaking take care of him. And as a Jet fan, as somebody who puts their money out, who is really looking forward to them getting better, how they let a kid – with this kind of talent, who, again, I don't like the term outplayed his contract. This kid's they knew what this kid was when he was 15 years old. We all know what Rick was like. We all knew what all your partners were like when they were 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. And this kid has done everything they wanted to do. It just shows again as a Jet.
So you're angry at the Jets then, Mike? I mean, you started by saying he hasn't outdone his contract, and now it sounds like you're angry at the organization. I'm confused at the point of the call.
No, I think his point was, and here's where I disagree. I mean, there's a reason why in the new CBA you can renegotiate your deal after 3 years. It's for exactly the reason that Chris said, is when you're considered the best safety in the sport and you're making 3.5 and Eddie Jackson's making, you know, almost 15 a year.
And Eddie Jackson got drafted in your same draft class, by the way. Same draft class.
Yeah, that's why I hate the CBA that you guys signed.
The system is,
I
mean, you're getting, broken.
No, you're getting punished for being a first-round pick because you got the fifth-year option and then they can franchise you.
Right.
So they actually have more control, which is ridiculous.
But under the new CBA, it voids if you have a Pro Bowl and an All-Pro in the first two or three seasons.
I'm saying the previous CBA.
Yeah,
I'm saying the one that you initially signed.
Oh, yeah, the one from 2011.
Yes.
Yeah, I got what you're saying.
Yeah. So
in the new one, you have more options if you're a big time player like Jamal Adams.
Here's where I agree with him though, and I feel the exact same way. And this is why I don't blame Jamal Adams, is the kid's done every single thing that you've asked. He's won his entire life. He turned himself into an all pro safety, the best in the game, and you're 16-32 in the 3 years. So you put him in a position where if we're not going to win, you're going to pay me what I want. As opposed to, you know, maybe I can wait because we're on the verge of being a Super Bowl team. Or, you know, we're a team that's always in the playoffs. So I can wait. I get it. I'll give a little because I know we're going to win.
Right.
What's he going to give? Why would he give anything? He's not going to give you a hometown discount. You stink.
Well, here's my problem with what the Jets did this offseason. They made it adversarial when they didn't have to. Like, I mean, this should have been.
It already was. It already was.
No, listen,
the relationship was already bad.
Let me finish. I get what you're saying in terms of what happened at the trade deadline last year, but when Jamal Adams came out early this offseason, he wasn't talking about a list of teams that he wanted to be traded to. He came out and said, I want a new contract. That's what he said. I want a new contract. I want to be paid. And it's only after several months, after we've gone through free agency, after Joe Douglas is signing guys like George Fant and Greg Van Roten and Breshad Perriman and Pierre Desir, after he's given those guys money, that's when Jamal Adams says, you know what? We've gone through free agency, we've gone through the draft, and the team has done everything except have a conversation with me about my money.
That's exactly right.
I got a problem with that. So maybe the number that you've been throwing out there, Rick, $20 million a year, maybe that is as a result of going through this offseason and continuing to stonewall Jamal every time he tries to broach the topic of a new conversation. That's what makes it even worse. That's what adds another layer on top of what we saw what happened during last year at the trade deadline. What I'm saying is, as an organization, you can't let it get to that point. Why would you ever do that? That doesn't make any sense.
Here we are, Chris. Here we are.
Yeah, we are. But, I mean, everybody wants to blame Jamal in this situation, and I think that's ridiculous.
I think it's a two-way street here.
Well, it can be a two-way street, Dave, but here's the thing. If you have your best player wanting to talk about his contract, at least have the conversation. They decided they didn't want to have the conversation.
I would have been happy if they knew they couldn't salvage this and they traded him in April, to be honest with you.
But the earlier they know, the better, which is why it doesn't make sense not to have the conversation when he brought it up after the season.
Completely agree. Couldn't agree with more. Let's look. Pro Football Focus has the most talented rosters. Just from a talent standpoint, the rosters are ranked. Ravens are number one. And, I mean, you can't argue with that, right? Saints check in at number two. I don't want to go through the entirety of the list, but I do want to get to the to the local teams. You've seen this, right, Chris? So it's not really guessing for you, but you care to tell anybody where the Giants and the Jets check in out of 32 teams?
Well, Dave, you said you didn't want to go through the entire list. If we were waiting to get to the Giants and Jets, we would have went through the whole damn list. That's what would have happened. The Giants are checking in at 27, and the Jets are checking in at 28. That's where the two local teams are.
It's kind of pathetic.
Two of the least talented teams in the NFL. The Jets are according to PFF, the fifth worst team in terms of talent, and the Giants are the sixth worst team. So
yeah.
That's where we're at.
Well, listen to who they have as the Giants starters on defense right now. Actually, the front three is not bad. Leonard Williams, Dalvin Tomlinson, Dexter Lawrence. It's not bad up front on defense. It's not.
That's solid. You can win with that, Dave.
What'd you say?
I said that's solid. You can win with that.
But now when you get to the back seven, I mean, Kyler Fackrell, Ximenez, Martinez does not exactly, and David Mayo does not exactly make you write home of the Giants linebackers of the 80s, does it?
No, I mean, the only plus player in that group would be David Mayo. But, I mean, when you look at the scheme that the Giants are employing with the 34, your difference makers have to be your linebackers. And guess what, Dave? They ain't got no difference makers.
Yeah, they don't have
them. Not one of them.
No. No. So you question how you going to get to the quarterback, and then you question the strength of the linebackers as well, Rick. I mean,
aren't you counting on Golden coming back, though? I mean, aren't you kind of counting that Golden's going to be back?
I expect he'll be back, yeah.
Yeah. No, the defense is bad. I mean, you saw that. I mean, the defense was atrocious last year. You saw
it'll be better this year than it was last year, though.
How could it be worse?
It can't.
It's like saying the Jets' offensive line is going to be better.
Yeah, and it is.
Yeah, it is. It should be.
It should be, is right.
I don't know how it gets worse.
And then the Giants' secondary is Bradbury. They have Baker penciled in now. Who knows if he ever plays again for the Giants. Julian Love, Xavier McKinney, the kid they drafted out of Alabama, and Jabril Peppers. So, I mean, the Giants' defense on paper, guys, and of course you don't watch these games on paper, but there's not a ton of talent on this defense right now.
No, unless you're running straight at them, the Giants' defense is going to have a hard time at stopping opposing offenses. That's the reality of it. And I mean, I hope that Bradbury can be, you know, an upgrade and help some of those young guys in the secondary find their way and realize their full potential. But I mean, the Giants defense has a long way to go, but I think the way that this team is built, they're relying on their offense to be a part of their defense. By having the upgrades along the offensive line, by Saquon Barkley coming back healthy and Darius Slayton taking that next step in year two to go along with Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard, Evan Engram in a contract year. Like, I'm looking at the Giants offense and saying that they're going to have to be the unit that wins the day for the Giants. They're going to have to be able to control time of possession. They're going to have to be able to dictate the complexion of the game with the scoreboard. That is what the Giants defense is going to that is what the Giants offense is going to have to do if the Giants are going to have a competitive season.
Yeah.
Because their defense by itself, their defense can't stop anybody by themselves.
No. And let's be fair. Like, if you're the Giants and you go 7-9, I mean, the expectations are not through the roof for the Giants right now, Rick. The Giants are expected to be a mediocre football team, and you hope to see growth from Daniel Jones. You hope that you like the coach, and you hope that some of the young players develop into better players in year two or three.
Yeah, as a Giants fan, you don't love the fact that your team is ranked 27th in the NFL as far as where their roster is at, but you also realize that you have a quarterback going into a second year, and you have a first-year head coach.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of lines up with where you're at as a franchise.
And what should be a rookie stud right or left tackle.
Yeah, and I think that the kid McKinney's going to be a stud, too. I think that was a great draft pick. I mean, there's talent. There's just not enough talent on the defensive side of the ball currently.
No.
I wonder if you took the Giants' offense and you took the Jets' defense.
You'd have a good team.
Where they would rank that.
I think you'd be you probably still wouldn't be top 10.
Hmm.
You wouldn't be top 10.
Interesting. Let's see who's 10.
You still don't have an edge rusher.
You still don't have anybody get to the quarterback.
You still don't have an edge rusher.
And your offensive line may not be still great.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they got the Steelers at 10. No, you're right. No, you wouldn't be top 10.
You wouldn't be top 10.
They got Cleveland 11.
Well, I think you could be better than Cleveland.
Are you what? Was that a serious comment?
Giants,
yeah,
I don't know about that one, Dave. Better than Cleveland?
I don't know about that one, Dave.
They got Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, Austin Hooper, David Njoku, Beckham, Landry. I mean, what are we talking about?
Their offensive line is supposed to be really, really good, too.
It should be
Jedrick Wills, Betonio, J.C. Tretter, Jack Conklin. That's a really good offensive line.
Yeah, you had one of your moments. That was an AFC is loaded moment.
Oh, stop it. You don't think
that could be better than Cleveland? You're tripping with that one, Dave.
They got Miles Garrett. Crazy. I mean, stop. You're out of your mind.
You're tripping with that one, Dave.
Denzel Ward. Come on, Dave.
You just went through the team. Mayfield was there last year. Hunt was there last year. Chubb was there last year. Njoku was there last year. Beckham was there last year. Landry's coming off surgery. He was there last year. I'm not saying they won't be, that they couldn't be, but to just emphatically say that's better than the Giants and Jets combined.
And so was Freddie Kitchens.
Okay.
Freddie Kitchens. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so this is talent of roster.
So you now are buying in that Cleveland is the 11th best team in the NFL.
Roster-wise?
Talent-wise,
has nothing to do with the results.
Yeah, talent, yeah. Yeah.
Talent-wise, yes.
Cleveland's got talent.
Cleveland's got one of the most talented rosters. I mean, that's why everyone was so dejected with how bad they were last year. Talent-wise, they're one of the best.
All right.
Production of wins,
I don't think
so
it's a stretch to say if you combine the Giants and the Jets, they could compete with the likes of the Cleveland Browns.
On paper, they couldn't. On paper, Cleveland would still have the better roster. What that equates to on a football field, who knows?
On paper, Cleveland's got one of the most talented rosters in football, but that
never
translates.
We just said that. That's what we just said. That was the point. That was the point of the exercise. On paper. This wasn't what happens when you put them on the field. This was strictly on paper. And on paper, even if you combine the Jets and the Giants, they would still be less talented than the Browns.
So where do you think they are? 15-ish?
Probably like middle. I would say probably somewhere in the middle of the pack.
Probably around there, right? Who's quarterback?
Guys, this is disturbing. I'm sitting here looking at this. I'm literally sitting here looking at this. They're saying that the Bengals have more talent than the Jets or the Giants. The Bengals now.
Where are they ranked on here?
Say the Lions have more talent. Lions.
The Bengals are 26, Dave.
Look at the Bengals' offense, Chris. The Bengals offensively have a lot of talent. You have a new quarterback. You have two receivers that didn't play last year in A.J. Green and T. Higgins. You have a left tackle who didn't play at all last year, was a first-round pick the year prior. Now, granted, yeah, Bobby Hart at right tackle, which God help him there. But, I mean, they have some talent on this Bengals team.
I'm not saying that they don't have any talent, Dave. What I'm saying is the Bengals were a two-win team last year. And Pro Football Focus is saying that talent-wise, they're better off than the Giants or the Jets.
Chris, there's only four teams that are not better off than the. No,
the Bengals
Giants
did beat the Jets
and the Jets
last year,
and that did happen. You're right.
Yeah, that happened.
That happened.
Yeah, the 0-11 Bengals.
So who's? I mean, 32nd is Jacksonville. They're a disaster of a team.
They're not trying to win this year.
Washington is 31. They, I mean, I guess a lot will depend on the quarterback, but I don't think they're gonna be very good. And I don't know. The Dolphins are behind both of these teams, too. And I think you could argue the Dolphins have more talent than the Jets and the Giants actually have.
Yeah, based on the moves that they made this offseason with the draft picks and free agency, if they hit on the majority of those moves, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, that's not a stretch.
Absolutely see that.
I mean, that wouldn't be a
stretch. And they check in at 30 on this list.
I mean, would Devontae Parker not be the best wide receiver on either of those teams?
I think he would.
Yes.
But
yes.
I'll tell you this, I don't think the Giants' trio of receivers, if you look Shepard, Tate, and Slayton, that's not a bad trio of receivers.
No.
And you throw Evan Engram in there as well? That's not bad.
No, it's not bad. Not operational, but it's not bad. No,
you're right. Parker would be the best, yes. But I don't look at the Giants' receivers and running backs and skill positions and say, this is why the Giants won't be a good football team.
No, but Devontae Parker would be definitively better than
any
of the wide receivers.
I agree with you 100%. But I mean, I look at the Jets' skill positions, and it scares me. I look at the Giants. I'm like, no, that should be fine.
I feel like the Giants are going to score a lot of points this season.
Because they're going to have to.
But they're going to be. I like Daniel Jones a lot, and I'm not afraid to say that. I think they're going to have a good offense. Defense, not so much, but the offense will be good.
Rick, I said it earlier. I think the Giants are a 7 or 8 win club this year. Like, that is my expectation for the Giants.
If the Giants win 7 or 8, and Daniel Jones is good in year 2. You're gonna fall in love with Joe Judge.
Well, I don't know how the Giants win 7 or 8 games without Daniel Jones being really good.
Fair enough. But so if the Giants get to 7 or 8 wins, and assuming that what happens with Daniel Jones is that he is good, the town will fall in love with Joe Judge.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I feel better about where the Giants are at right now than the Jets.
Do you agree with that, Rick?
Do I agree with that? They're so close, man. I mean, every single list that you look at, I mean, it's pretty much, it doesn't really matter what it is, too. It's usually Jets and Giants right next to each other.
But it's so weird. Like, the Jets coach is on the hot seat. The Giants is not. The Giants GM is on the hot seat. The Jets GM is not. Quarterbacks are similar.
They've morphed into the same organization.
A lot of comparison with these.
They've morphed into the same team. I mean,
the Jets have a defense you look at, you're like, boy, that's really good. The Giants have an offense you look at and say, boy, that should be really good. Giants defense doesn't look so good. Jets offense doesn't look so good.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I guess.
I feel like the Giants have an identity. I feel like the Giants have an identity. And Joe Judge and Jason Garrett are going to continue to build that as the foundation around Daniel Jones. They're going to continue to move in that direction. With the Jets, I just don't know because they have an offensive-minded coach, and yet the strength of the team is on the defensive side of the ball, and the best player that they have on that side of the ball is now at odds with the GM and the head coach. I just feel like in terms of what they're doing and program building, I feel better about the direction that the Giants are going as opposed to the Jets. Maybe I should say it that way.
I think if you had to pick one of those two teams, I agree with you. I think I'd take the Giants. I don't know that I feel great about the Giants because I don't trust the GM, but if I had to pick one, I'd
But
pick
Dave,
the
he ain't going to be the GM much longer. We know that there is going to be an end to that.
Well, I mean, he could be the GM for another 4 years.
I would seriously doubt that Dave Gettleman is going to be the GM of the Giants going into the 2023 season. Seriously doubt it.
Yeah, but you got to, I mean, you guys got computer folks now. You got that big analytic guy.
He's
you guys are doing it.
I just feel like Dave Gettleman is the one. I think that Dave Gettleman was the guy that they hired to kind of
stabilize,
you know, move past Jerry Reese, get the Giants on solid footing, and then hand it off to somebody that they feel like can be the GM long term.
Bridge guy? Is that the bridge GM?
Is a bridge GM, yeah.
Get you heading in the right direction.
And then you bring, hopefully you're heading in the right direction, and then you
bring in somebody, or maybe you promote Kevin Abrams. Maybe you use Kevin Abrams as your next general manager because they really hold him in high regard. Maybe he's your guy. Who knows?
If Daniel Daniel Jones is the guy, you're headed in the right direction.
Yes.
Exactly. And it feels like he is the guy.
Should be the same thing with you. If Sam Darnold is the guy, you should be heading in the right direction.
I know, but we should be going into year three still asking that question.
That's true.
That's the unfortunate part. And because you don't trust the head coach, that lines up for a disaster in the making.
Who do you trust to have a better season this year, Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold?
I think you'd have to trust Daniel Jones. I mean, look at his weapons. I mean, the fact that you bring in, as bad as you think that Jason Garrett was as a head coach, he's good at developing quarterbacks. I mean, you can't argue that. Develop Tony Romo, develop Dak Prescott. So, I mean, I don't know what Joe Judge is going to be. But as far as, you know, handling a young quarterback, Jason Garrett has already shown you that he can do that. Adam Gase you heard Dan Orlovsky, who knows Adam Gase, said that Ryan Tannehill was just average as a Dolphin, and then all of a sudden he gets away from Adam Gase and he turned into one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL last year. Is that just happen?
No, that's every play. That's every star player once they get away from Adam Gase.
Look at Kenyon Drake.
That's everyone.
Look, Kenyon Drake is one of the best running backs in football all of a sudden.
Yeah. Devontae, as soon as he left, Devontae Parker turned into a beast.
We just talked about Devontae Parker would be the best receiver on either of these two teams right now. Adam Gase had him in Miami.
You're preaching to the choir. I mean, you're not telling me anything I don't know. It scares the hell out of me. And the fact that last year he waited as long as he waited, I mean, you could clearly tell that Sam wasn't comfortable with the offense, and then he waited. It was up to Sam to go into his office and tell him, you know, here's what I like and don't like.
But, Rick, isn't this what we talked about when they hired Adam Gase? We said it. It didn't feel like Chris Johnson was hiring him for the right reasons. It felt like Chris Johnson was hiring Adam Gase because Adam Gase would entertain any ideas that Chris Johnson had about the football team and what they should be doing.
Adam Gase was desperate to get another job, and he told Chris Johnson
exactly.
He told
Chris Johnson whatever he wanted to hear, rather than going out and hiring the most qualified candidate that you possibly could have, a candidate, by the way, that has a Super Bowl on his resume, and that told the media that he wanted the job because of Sam Darnold. Could have hired him, decided he wasn't good enough for him.
Oh, by the way, if you guys are paying attention, and I know you two are, but if everyone that loves football is paying attention, it's funny how the conversation around Mike McCarthy has changed a little bit when you see Aaron Rodgers' relationship with the new head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe it wasn't Mike McCarthy. Maybe Aaron's just hard to work with.
He is hard to work with.
But here's the other thing, Rick. Mike McCarthy is good enough for Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys when they're trying to win a championship, but he's not good enough for the New York Jets when they're trying to develop Sam Darnold?
No, he was too good. He was too qualified.
This comes from our Rich Cimini. Coming up in a few minutes, Adam Gase will address the media for the first time since April 27th. So stay tuned on that. I'm sure he'll have some words on Jamal Adams. I wonder if this is a reaction to Greg Williams and his conference call yesterday.
Well, play the Tannenbaum sound. You get that Tannenbaum sound, play it.
All right, Santi, you got Tannenbaum. Why don't you cue that up and play Mike Tannenbaum?
Yeah, I know Adam really well. He does not like it, and he may not say that publicly, but I promise you that he's speaking to Greg Williams. Adam does not want to be the bad cop to Greg Williams' good cop. Greg Williams is a really good coach, very talented. But 10 or 15% of the time, you're going to pay the Greg Williams tax. He's going to say things that just don't align organizationally. This is an issue that should be handled by the head coach and Adam Gase, Joe Douglas, the general manager of the Jets, and Greg Williams should coach defense. And the players that are on the field, that's his responsibility. And I know Adam is a very diligent, orderly guy. It's something he wants to handle, and he doesn't want to read about one of his coaches trying to be the good cop in this situation.
And there you have it.
Dave, I know you're not a big percentage guy. I know you're not a big percentage guy, Dave. But I guess my whole thing with Greg Williams saying what he said yesterday is I don't understand why you were going to schedule a conference call for Greg Williams during this time, knowing that he was going to be asked about his best player. Like, to me, that's the part of it that just doesn't make any sense. If you're worried about Greg Williams maybe saying something about the Jamal Adams situation,
yeah, don't have him have a call.
That could go against the company line, then why even have the call?
Yep.
We don't even know when guys are going to report for training camp. Was it necessary to have Greg Williams on a conference call yesterday? No.
What did you need to hear from Greg Williams yesterday?
More importantly, what exactly is the company line? I mean, what are we talking about?
The company line is that we're not going to address Jamal Adams' contract right now.
It's a mess.
That apparently is what it is.
You hit the nail on the head. It's a mess. We go from DCR to CMT. Rick, the floor is yours.
All right, here we go, fellas. Friday edition of CMT. Cuddle,
which is
Mary,
the fun edition of the week-long CMT.
Yeah, this is the edition that you've waited for the entire week.
I mean, you could get desserts, you could get movies, you can get breakfast. You don't know where you're going to go here.
You have no idea. Mm-hmm. But before we get to CMT, I want to run through this quick. This is actually a pandemic game. This is a pandemic game for this Friday. How well do Chris Canty and Dave Rothenberg know the United States of America?
How well do we know the United States of America?
Okay.
Yeah, what I mean by that is Yelp just released most popular takeout delivery foods state by state during this pandemic. How well do you know the states?
Okay.
I'll start off easy. You got Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York. What do you think the most popular takeout food item has been during the pandemic?
I don't know that I'm going to be very good at this. So it's
New
a
York.
Chain?
No. Food. Type
just,
of food.
Just what kind of food? All right. Now, are you looking for, like, specific, like pizza, or are you looking for Italian?
No, I'm looking specific.
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 Huh. Specific. Okay.
You may have said it.
Pizza.
Yes, pizza. Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York has been pizza. Can you guess what Florida? What Florida's most popular takeout food has been, according to Yelp?
Something for the older people. What do old people like?
Applesauce.
Right. Something they can gum. Something early, like a 4:30 dinner kind of thing.
Entenmann's. Garlic rolls. Florida was garlic rolls.
Garlic rolls?
Garlic
rolls. I would have been here till through Barton Hahn.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed garlic rolls.
Can you guess what the most popular takeout food item in Kansas and North Dakota has been?
Ribs.
No. This is Euros.
Euros?
Really?
Yeah, really. Euros. And here is I'll give you the last one because this one made no sense to me either. Nebraska. Favorite takeout food item in Nebraska during
Cornbread.
The pandemic? No. You could sit here for the next 3 days and probably not get this.
I thought cornbread was such a good guess, too.
It was a terrific guess. You wouldn't just get cornbread, though, I mean, would you?
I mean, it's
I guess you could.
Your state, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could.
Yeah. Well,
sushi. Nebraska.
Yeah, sushi in Nebraska.
I mean, are you honestly, if you went to Nebraska and your buddy picks you up at the airport and he says, let's go get sushi, are you going to do that?
No. There's no chance.
No.
It'd be the last thing on my mind.
No.
They're trying to start a whole new pandemic.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Nebraska.
That's right. Salmonella, Nebraska.
All right, here we go. CMT. Today's category for CMT, and this is in honor of the fact that Cassie taped a Leonardo DiCaprio vehicle that we watched yesterday. Catch Me If You Can.
Go on. Terrific movie.
Terrific movie.
Tom
We're going
Hanks,
with actors.
Wonderful movie, yeah.
We are going with an actor edition.
I love
CMT.
It. All right.
All right. Chris's favorite. We're going to start with best looking. Best looking.
You better have Brad Pitt on this, by the way.
I'm giving you Clooney.
Clooney.
I'm giving you Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm giving you Tom Cruise.
All right. This is easy for me.
Okay.
I'm not a Tom Cruise guy. He's little. I don't.
Wow.
Sizes. He's a little guy. He's like 5'5", 5'6". I don't. No, I mean, so I enjoyed that, but, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Tom Cruise. I did like Risky Business. I did like Jerry Maguire, but overall, I'm not a huge fan of Tom Cruise. So I'm gonna trash Tom Cruise.
Look at this garbage! Look at this garbage!
Now, the next two are just tremendous actors. But I think that Brad Pitt is underrated because he's actually so handsome. We don't appreciate how good of an actor he is. If I always wanted to say this, to be honest anyway, I'm going to marry Brad Pitt.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Gentlemen, welcome to Fight Club.
Fight Club, Moneyball, Benjamin Button, I mean, the Ocean's movies. He's a terrific actor.
Seven was good.
Seven was great. What's in the Box, right? I mean, he's a terrific actor.
Brad probably is.
I'm going with Brad Pitt. And you know what? I'm not opposed to say that I would look forward to this as well. I'll cuddle George Clooney.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I'm going to agree with you across the board, Dave, and maybe it's a little bit of recency bias with Brad Pitt and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But
which was another good movie.
An outstanding movie, but I'm right there with you on all three.
Glorious Bastards?
Yeah, see, I'm cuddling Brad Pitt. I'm getting steamy with Brad Pitt. He's a little, I'm marrying George Clooney. I got the tequila money. Come on.
You're not going wrong with either way. See, so when I kicked Cruise to the curb, you guys were
Lake
like,
Como.
But you both agree.
No, because then Cruise, I got to go with the Scientology. No, I'm all set. There's too much going on there.
Yeah,
this is a tricky one. Well, maybe not. I'm going to give you Pacino.
Oh, De Niro.
Pesci and De Niro.
Chris, you want to go?
Yeah, I'll roll with this one. For me, this is easy. Even though I love my cousin Vinny, I got to trash Joe Pesci. Not going to happen.
Look at this garbage!
I am going to marry Al Pacino.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
And I'm going to cuddle De Niro.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Now, I will say this. Between Pacino and De Niro, you can't go wrong.
No.
So, as long as you have one of those two as the marrying type, I think you've succeeded here. I agree with you. Pesci, great. Not in that category. So I will move on from Joe.
Joe's an excellent actor.
I'm not what saying he's not. But, I mean, Pacino and De Niro are the Mount Rushmore of actors. This is a conundrum now.
You know what was on last night? Have you ever seen Dirty Grandpa with De Niro?
Yeah.
And Zach, I didn't even realize it's like I haven't seen it in so long, how funny he is in that movie.
Oh, he's great in that movie.
When Zac Efron walks
it's
out with
not
the
a
white
great
belt.
Movie, though.
No, it's not, but it is what, I mean, it is what it is. When Efron walks out with the white belt and he goes, you know who wears white belts? And Efron's like, no. People that are terrible at karate and people that are terrible at life. Go take that thing off.
I'm gonna marry Robert De Niro.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
And I'll cuddle Al Pacino. But it's a cuddle with a potential to up the relationship.
You could find yourself that cuddle could lead to a divorce from, you know, a divorce from De Niro and then marry
it could,
Pacino.
Potentially, yes. Yeah. So that's my final answer.
Stranger things have happened. All right, I'm going to give you some Boston boys. I'm going to give you Damon Affleck and Wahlberg.
Damon Affleck and Wahlberg. All right, this is a good trio. Damon Affleck.
No, we're just saying actor. We're not saying anything else involved. Just acting.
Right. So you can't have.
I mean, you can put however you choose to. I mean, whatever you like to bake into.
Like the musical careers of Marky Mark, or is this just the movie careers?
I mean, if you want to add that, I mean, the first
creative part of what Marky Mark has done, you know,
the Funky Bunch. You want to throw that in? You want to throw in Wahlberg? I mean, it's all. Listen, I threw in the tequila with Clooney.
Yeah, Entourage. The family, right? He's got that.
His fast brother. Food chain, Wahlberger.
Right, and his brother, big-time actor as well. All that being said, I'm still gonna move on from Mark Wahlberg.
Wow! You're trashing Mark Wahlberg?
I'm trashing Mark Wahlberg.
Oh my God, I can't believe
you
just
I'll tell you
that.
Why.
I'm with you, Dave.
I'll tell you why. Because Goodwill Hunting is one of
baby?
The, Goodwill Hunting is one of the great movies. And that was a collaboration of Damon and Affleck.
Do you like apples?
So, yeah, I'm trashing Wahlberg.
Oh, so disrespectful.
I'm sorry. And now I'm torn. This is Pacino De Niro for me on a lesser level, because I don't think you can go wrong.
I think there's clearly one that's better than the
you
other
do?
One.
Do?
I do.
I'm going to marry Damon. If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry
And
him.
I'm going to cuddle Affleck. Finally.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Matt Damon is a better actor than Ben Affleck.
How you have to trash Marky Mark is amazing to me.
You would have married Marky Mark.
I am marrying Marky Mark.
No, you would not.
100%. 100%.
Now, you didn't say the guy that I would want to hang out with the most. You just said who's the better actor.
Yeah.
Because if it was a guy that I wanted to hang out with, it would be a completely different conversation.
I can't name a Mark Wahlberg movie that I don't know if, that I didn't like. I don't think.
You want me to go to IMDb? I'll find you a Mark Wahlberg movie that's not good.
There may be one.
Oh, yeah, you can find plenty of those.
He was Dirk Diggler, which
awesome.
Was good. Which was good. He was hilarious in Ted. He was good in The Departed. Had a small role in that.
Basketball Diaries he was good in.
I mean, he's good in Transformers. I mean, he can do anything. Plus, he can sing, he can dance, he can golf. You guys are out of your mind.
You're very offended by this.
All right, here we go. I'm going to give you some superheroes. I'm going to give you Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you Hugh Jackman and Chris Thor Hemsworth.
All right, go ahead, Chris.
Who could have been... I actually could have put him in the handsome category, too, but...
Who's the second selection here?
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. Very
versatile.
I'm going to marry Robert Downey Jr. as a superhero.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I am going to cuddle Chris Hemsworth.
Bombs and
I'm going to trash Hugh Jackman.
You're gassing Wolverine.
Garbage. Yeah. Look at this garbage.
Now, let me see if I understand this. I'm only selecting them as their superhero roles, or
no.
These are superhero actors who I am
no,
now
I just put them in
as bigger roles.
Yeah, just in general, I just put them in a superhero category. Just I
gotcha.
Just, for my own fun.
Yeah, then I'm gonna. I agree with Chris. Robert Downey Jr. is a great actor.
You gotta marry him.
He's phenomenal. So I will absolutely marry him. And I love a, you know, rags to riches story, and the what he's overcome is impressive to me as well. So I'll marry Robert Downey Jr.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I will cuddle Hugh Jackman.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And was it Hemsworth? Hemsworth?
Hemsworth.
The name
is. Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, I'm gonna move on.
You're gassing Thor?
Firmly.
Yeah. If I could rename... The more I think about it, if I could rename Dave Rothenberg... Just to kind of encapsulate who you are, Huge Jackman would probably be a great name for you.
Yeah, I agree that.
Would be very self-explanatory.
I was thinking that when you gave that to me. And...
You are an old man and a fool!
All right, I'm going to give you Will Ferrell, Chris Farley, and Adam Sandler.
Sandler?
This is a tough category.
Farley and
Ferrell.
Who?
Will.
And Ferrell.
Yep.
All right, Chris, you're up.
Okay, I am going to marry Will Ferrell.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm going to cuddle Chris Farley.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I'm trashing Adam Sandler.
Wow.
This garbage! Look at this garbage!
That's a tough category, though, Ricky.
There's no easy category.
Could you imagine if Dave actually was friends with Chris Farley? The debauchery? I mean,
it would have been a lot. This is very difficult. I think you're going to be very upset with me, both of you. But I'm gonna call it like I see it. I'm trashing Will Ferrell.
Firmly garbage.
I told you you'd be upset.
Oh, wow.
You've got to keep our composure.
I love Will Ferrell, but I'm sorry.
From old
I'm
school trashing. Alone, I couldn't do it.
I'm cuddling Chris Farley because I think he'd be a great cuddler.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Good, great, grand, wonderful.
And I'm marrying Adam Sandler.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Is a tremendous comedic actor and has actually shown his chops as a serious actor
you
as well.
You blew it!
I'll marry him.
Yeah, this is such a tough category. I feel like, I mean, the amount of respect that Will Ferrell and Adam Sandler have for Chris Farley and how good he was would almost sway me towards Chris Farley. But I wouldn't want to get rid of any of those guys.
No, of course you don't. Yeah. That's why this is the game that it is.
It's tough. All right, I got two more. Let's make this quick. I'm going to give you Will Smith.
Hold on, you didn't give us your CMT on that category, Ricky.
I don't know if I can give it to you. I mean, it almost depresses me. I don't want to get rid of any of them. I love them all.
You have to. You can't ask us and then back out of it.
Right?
Oh, they're so much fun, though.
And host of you.
I think I would marry Sandler. Oh, I can't do it. I would probably marry Sandler, cuddle Farley, and I think I would trash Will Ferrell.
All right, so you're the same as me, and you yelled at me.
Yeah. But I didn't want, because this is why I like to host it. I don't like to give answers.
Yeah, because it's not so easy disgusting. When you're in our position, is it?
I love Will Ferrell.
All right, come on. Let's move along.
Some next. Of Step Brothers the other come day. On. It's hilarious.
By the way, did you know? You didn't enjoy the movie Scooby-Doo, right?
Scoob? No, I didn't love it.
You know,
he was in that.
The role of Scooby.
Played Scooby?
Yeah.
No, who played Scooby?
Mark Wahlberg.
No, he did not play Scooby.
That's what I'm being told.
No, he was in the movie. He was one of the voices.
He was the voice of Scooby.
No, he was not the voice of Scooby.
Well, then I'm being told misinformation.
He was the voice of the superhero in it.
All right, well, if you hate the movie...
It's an animated film that he just did his voice on. Just free money.
And Rockstar was not a good movie either.
Rockstar wasn't a bad movie.
It was not a good movie.
Oh, here we go. All right.
Come on.
Will Smith, The Rock, and Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn is very funny.
I love Vince Vaughn.
All right. Chris, it's my turn or your turn?
I went first with the Ferrell Farley Sandler conversation, so it's your ups.
All right. This is easy for me for the marriage. I'm going to marry Will Smith. He's an amazing actor.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
No! He's got depth. No! He's been in terrific movies. I'll marry Will Smith. Well, The Rock is always the same guy. He's good.
He's the highest paid actor in Hollywood.
But is that what it's about? No, I'm going on chops, baby. This is Hollywood. I'm cuddling Vince Vaughn.
Bombs and hellacious.
And I'm done with The Rock.
Done with The Rock, huh?
I'm done with The Rock.
What do you think, C? What do you got, C?
I completely agree with Dave across the board. I mean, I know The Rock makes a lot of money per movie, but, I mean, Dave's right. It's the same character in every single movie. So it gets to a point where it's just redundant. So, yeah, I'll marry Will Smith and I'll cuddle Vince Vaughn.
And truthfully, the fact that you put Will Smith and The Rock in the same category is not a good look for you.
I was running. I went because The Rock, he does blockbuster films. He's the highest paid. I mean, I'm running out of actors.
No, you're wrong.
Someone's got to be trash. I got to give someone trash.
Go ahead. Last one.
Two out of the three have to give you trouble. Do you want to marry Vince Vaughn and cuddle Will Smith? Or do you want to marry Will Smith and cuddle Vince Vaughn?
Will Smith, clearly the guy.
I wouldn't tell The Rock that I was trashing him in person, though.
I can't tell my kids that. How many times I've seen Moana? DiCaprio. Denzel. Tom Hanks. Now this is, I mean, now we're talking the best.
I mean, this is like Sophie's Choice, what you're doing here.
This is the cream of the crop right here.
Chris, you go ahead.
Okay, I am going.
Let me just say this before you even start. You cannot trash Tom Hanks. No, you cannot trash Tom Hanks.
I wasn't about to, Dave.
Okay, but I'm just saying to play this game accordingly, you just can't. But go ahead.
No, sorry. No, I'm marrying Denzel. I'm cuddling Tom Hanks, and I'm trashing DiCaprio.
Oh my God,
that's not even that wasn't even that difficult for me.
Wow. Oh my God! Can I abstain? Do I have like the
no? You made me pick. No,
that
you
I
made
can.
Me pick.
Can I cannot play.
Nope.
I'll not play this one. And we got Adam Gay sound. Can I tease
you
ahead?
You made me pick. You.
I
made
don't like.
Me
I'm
pick.
Very. This is awful for me. Fine. I'm marrying Tom Hanks.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
There's no crying in baseball.
I'll cuddle Denzel, and I apologize.
You just trashed DiCaprio?
I feel awful about it.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, I'm trashing DiCaprio. I don't feel good about it. He's a great actor.
Me feed me the poor? Is that what you guys want?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
I even liked him in Growing Pains.
How good was he in What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
It was great.
Unbelievable.
I even liked Titanic.
Departed. Awesome.
Awesome. Basketball Diaries, unbelievable.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah,
all right.
Not my proudest.
I don't even know.
How about you? You do it quickly.
I don't have to. I'm the host.
You do. I'm not breaking until you do it.
Listen, in the words of the great Michael Kay, I think we need to towel off.
No.
We need to towel off.
I'm not going to break. Santiago says he refuses to go to break until you choose.
I'm trashing Tom Hanks.
For me.
I'm trashing
Hanks. No.
Wow.
No. Yes. Now we're going to
break. I don't know how that's possible.
He's like the face of America.
I have to. Listen.
Find me one person that doesn't love Tom Hanks.
I'm not saying I don't love him.
Find me one. Call right now. There's not one person.
I mean, I like Denzel and DiCaprio better. What can I tell you?
Not one person doesn't love Tom Hanks. What a horrendous trash. I shouldn't have asked you. I apologize.
I mean, you got.
You asked me.
Saving Private Ryan, Forrest Gump, Philadelphia.
Oh.
Big.
You can't trash Tom Hanks.
Come on, man. You can't do that.
It's not a winnable category.
No, but you certainly didn't win it. All right, let's take a break.
Yeah, you can't do that, Rick.
Now, Sunday night, 9 o'clock ESPN TV, it's Backstory with Don Van Natta Jr. As we approach the 10-year anniversary of LeBron James's The Decision, Don gives you a behind-the-scenes look at the developments that led to The Decision, the far-reaching consequences of the telecast, and its legacy for a new era of player empowerment. We bring him in now, Don Van Natta Jr. Thanks for a couple minutes this afternoon, Don.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing?
We're pretty good. So I remember this like it was yesterday. And for those that don't, just kind of refresh the memory. LeBron got really beaten up over this decision 10 years ago, didn't he?
He really did. He was vilified across the country for sitting down with Jim Gray at the Boys and Girls Club in Greenwich, Connecticut, live on ESPN. It was a one-hour broadcast. I think it was the way he did it. The way it was executed, as much as the fact that he turned his back on his hometown of Cleveland, he said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, a very inelegant way to say it, of course. But it was also the fact there was 23 questions asked by Jim Gray before he asked, what's your decision? Are you a nail biter? Where's the powder? All these inane, silly questions. And just LeBron looked so uncomfortable. It was so awkward. So it was an awkward kind of not great night of television. And then, of course, the way LeBron did it is what we all remember. But what we go into in this episode on Sunday night, guys, is the legacy of it. Looking back 10 years, so much more was going on. It was really a revolutionary moment for player empowerment, for athletes telling their own stories, and also for LeBron finding his voice. Even though he didn't have it that night, he certainly has found it since.
Yeah, Don, in doing the story, was there anything, that came to light that you didn't even realize? When you dove into this, maybe the origin of the decision and where this whole idea came from?
Yeah, that was a big part of a big goal of the show was to figure out whose idea was this. You guys may remember Jim Gray, the veteran broadcaster, said it was his idea just a month before that. Gray said he had pitched it to Maverick Carter, LeBron's business partner, and Ari Emanuel, the super agent in Hollywood during the NBA Finals in L.A. Actually, we figured out that the idea came from one of the most unlikely sources many months earlier. In November of 2009, a guy named Drew, don't know Drew's last name, just know his name is Drew, from Columbus, Ohio, wrote a letter to Bill Simmons, an email in Bill Simmons' mailbag column on ESPN.com saying LeBron should do a one-hour announcement show live on ABC this summer. And Simmons replied, hey, that's a great idea. Maybe LeBron should put it on pay-per-view. Simmons then took that idea and pitched it to LeBron's inner circle in February in Dallas at the NBA All-Star Weekend. Simmons also pitched it to ESPN executives. And then for months, Simmons behind the scenes was trying to get this show off the ground. It didn't get anywhere, even though Simmons worked at ESPN at the time. And then it took Ari Emanuel to pitch it to John Skipper, who was an executive. And Simmons was sort of cut out of the process. And it was Maverick Carter, Jim Gray, and Ari Emanuel that were the sort of founding fathers of that 1 hour of television. So it's very interesting how it all went down.
Don, you talked about the decision being the beginning or marking the beginning of the player empowerment era, yet we saw LeBron in the summer of 2014 had a distinctly different approach in his return to Cleveland. I guess my question to you is, are players still sensitive in the way that they're going to send the message that they are leaving the teams that, that they're currently with for another team?
Oh, absolutely. No, and that's a great question. LeBron learned a lot of lessons that night, and certainly one of them is you don't turn your back on your hometown team, the place where you were born, in such a big way with 10 million people watching. And certainly you have to be scripted. He wasn't scripted that night. He kind of winged it. And 4 years later, as you point out, when he left Miami and returned home, it was an as-told-to story, an essay in Sports Illustrated with the writer Lee Jenkins. And then 4 years after that, when LeBron left Cleveland for L.A., it was a one-page statement from Clutch Sports, from Rich Paul's agency out there, announcing LeBron was signing with the Lakers. So each move he made got smaller, and we saw it with Tom Brady when he went to the Bucks. Players, big, particularly star players, when they leave one team for another, are very careful in how they do it. It's carefully stage managed, and I believe it's all because of the way LeBron handled the decision.
9 o'clock Sunday night, ESPN with Don Van Natta Jr. Backstory: the decision of LeBron James' 10-year anniversary of that. Does he admit to regret? Does he look back and say maybe it wasn't something I should have gone and done, or is that not something that's gone through his mind?
Oh, yeah, no, he regretted it that night, I think. I mean, I actually believe as he sat in the chair and Jim Gray was asking all these inane questions of him, LeBron was regretting doing it. I mean, you could see it on his face. He was so uncomfortable. But on the plane ride down after that show from Greenwich to Miami, LeBron and his inner circle, there were tears on the plane. They were, you know, they were seeing images of LeBron's jersey being burned in Cleveland. And Maverick Carter, LeBron's childhood friend and business partner, felt that this show actually had trashed his best friend's image. And that whole first year in Miami, if you guys remember, LeBron was a villain and booed in every NBA arena. It wasn't just the decision. It was the next night, that rally in Miami with D. Wade and Chris Bosh, when LeBron said, we're not going to win not one championship, not two, not three, not four, kept ticking all that off. So that was sort of the bookend to the night before. And he definitely regrets it. He has said he regrets it. But now, looking back 10 years, LeBron and Maverick Carter see it as a sort of rite of passage for these media and production companies that they've started. LeBron is an executive producer of More Than an Athlete, The Shop, Uninterrupted, Shut Up and Dribble, all these shows. And just this week, it was announced another $100 million has been raised for LeBron and Maverick Carter to green light storytelling by black storytellers. And so it was really a moment of empowerment for LeBron now in the way they see it, but they certainly didn't know that then. They just knew this is something they wanted to try out, and it just didn't go very well. And they certainly have learned from their mistakes since.
Don, now, I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but with how poorly the decision went, do you think that it was always in LeBron's mind that he would go back to Cleveland, or because the decision went so poorly, he felt like he owed it to Cleveland to go back and win them a championship?
Well, I had reporting for this episode that told me that even the day after the decision, when LeBron's in Miami preparing for that rally, his inner circle were telling people, you know, people don't understand in Cleveland, they're so upset with us, LeBron may go back. They were thinking about it that early. Now, whether or not that was being expressed because they were so hurt by the reaction, that unfortunately I don't know. But certainly it was something that was being told to reporters just a day or two after LeBron did the decision show. And then, you know, obviously when he returned 4 years later, I mean, everybody loves a sort of redemption story. And then to win the championship in Cleveland and end that half a century drought, I mean, it's like all was forgiven in Cleveland, even to the point when LeBron finally left to go to L.A., people were like, okay. I mean, Dave Chappelle has a very funny riff about this in the most recent stand-up that came out, that 846 comment where he said, "We're like people basically, people were like, okay, we get it. You know, you want us a championship, you want to go to L.A., we understand." It's very funny. You know, all was forgiven, I believe, by a lot of Cleveland fans because he came back and won them a title.
Don, you talked about the outrage that Cavs fans had when LeBron left the first time with the decision. But it wasn't just Cavs fans. You actually had the owner, Dan Gilbert, you know, expressing how frustrated he was with the way that LeBron did it and claiming that he was going to win a title before LeBron did. How did Dan Gilbert and the Cavs organization mend fences with LeBron in order to facilitate him coming back in 2014?
That's a really good question. You know, unfortunately, I didn't speak to Gilbert for this episode, and I wish I could have asked him that question if he agreed to talk to me. But we have Bomani Jones, the ESPN commentator. I asked him that question, and, you know, he said, like, personally, he wouldn't have gone back to work for Dan Gilbert, but LeBron and his inner circle looked at Dan Gilbert as if Dan Gilbert was working for LeBron. And as you remember, that Comic Sans letter was so over the top that Gilbert put out. And, you know, we have folks, including Mike Wilbon, that said, we deal with the race question and how white America saw the decision versus black America. And we go into that in the episode on Sunday night. And Wilbon said it all just came down to control, the way people, you know, through the prism of what they looked at this for. And Keith Klinkscales, a former ESPN executive who I interviewed on camera, he was at ESPN and was working with the LeBron camp on that decision show, said that, you know, black America saw it as a moment of freedom, a moment of empowerment. And that is not how Dan Gilbert obviously saw it in that moment.
All right. Well, Don, listen, we really appreciate a couple minutes. We're all going to certainly watch the episode Sunday night, 9 o'clock ESPN TV, the decision from LeBron James, the 10-year anniversary. Good stuff. And next time you have one of these big events, we'll certainly talk to you again.
Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate the time today. And stay safe.
All right. Same to you as well. And he does such a good job. And these are so well done. So that'll be really, really good. Sunday night, 9 o'clock. Backstory with Don Van Natta Jr.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I had extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.